Upstate Medical University in Syracuse, New York invites you to be the informed patient with the podcast that features experts from Central New York's only academic medical center. I'm your host, Amber Smith. Today, we'll learn about music therapy from my guest, Claire Arizina, who's the music therapist at the Upstate Golisano Children's Hospital. Welcome to the informed patient, Ms. Arizina.
Thank you so much for having me, Amber. I'm thrilled to be here and talk a little bit about what I do every day.
Now, how do you define music therapy? What is that?
The official definition from AMTA, which is the American Music Therapy Association, is that music therapy is the clinical and evidence-based use of music interventions to achieve individualized goals within a therapeutic relationship. However, when I'm meeting a family, that's a big mouthful, and there's a lot of words there that most people don't use every day. So when I introduce myself to families, I tell them that I make music with people to help with whatever they need help with.
And we're all familiar with music, but a lot of us might have not thought of it as being a therapy.
Yeah. So, you know, music therapy really is aimed at helping people to be the best version of themselves. So as you just alluded to, music is human behavior. As long as we know that people have been living together in groups, we found evidence that they were making music together, whether it was in the form of, you know, drums or flutes. You know, certainly there would be no archaeological record of people singing, but some of the studies have shown that there is evidence that people were singing and communicating in that way. Music is part of our humanity, and, you know, being able to share that with people is really a powerful part of what I do.
So do you think of music therapy as a treatment or as a preventive?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It really can be both. More often, the way that music therapy is practiced in the United States, it's a treatment. So it is usually available in spaces where people already have an identified problem. So a person who's had a stroke, a child who's been identified as needing special education services. However, there are a lot of ways to use music therapy to really bolster people's coping skills and to kind of add to that like self-regulation picture. So as social emotional learning has become more in vogue, music therapists are really finding a niche in that space. And really here at the hospital, I do both. So I not only see kids who are demonstrably having a hard time being in the hospital, but I also see kids who are maybe at risk for having a hard time being in the hospital just because of their treatment plan, their diagnosis, what's going on for them, what their family dynamic is like, all of those sorts of things.
So could music therapy be appropriate for all types of diagnoses, or is there one or more that it's more proven in?
Really, anybody with a human body who likes music could benefit from music therapy. You know, music therapists work across the lifespan from, you know, NICU, which is the neonatal ICU, through end-of-life care with both children and adults. So really, across the entire lifespan, music therapists are able to work with people and, again, help with whatever they need help with. Again, as I said earlier, it does tend to be the case that music therapists work with populations who are struggling in whatever way, you know, so people who have substance use disorders, people who have disabilities, people who maybe don't have another way to communicate easily, or who, you know, have anxiety or depression that's really debilitating. But, you know, really music therapy could help anyone.
Are there any risks associated with music therapy?
Well, music is a multisensory experience. So as with any experience, it can be overwhelming or emotionally triggering if it's not implemented carefully. So particularly for vulnerable populations, so like especially NICU, there's a lot of research about overstimulation and sound levels. And, you know, that can be really critical in that time when these babies' neurological systems aren't fully developed yet. Or, you know, people who've had a TBI, who are on, you know, low stim percussions. Certainly somebody going in there with a brass band would not be indicated. And, you know, people with a trauma history who might be emotionally triggered and have no way to regulate that response. So it is really important that trained people are implementing music therapy, especially with vulnerable populations.
You mentioned TBI, that's the traumatic brain injury.
Yes, thank you.
That makes me think about, I mean, some people are in a coma, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does music therapy help people in those situations?
It can. So because of the way that auditory processing works in the brain, even when higher level brain functions are not online. So in example of coma, some of those more brainstem and midbrain responses are still ongoing. So because music has such a big processing component in the lower part of the brain, you know, people who are in comas have identified, I could hear things when I wasn't conscious. And again, when people are in those coma states, if they are having problems with that brainstem and midbrain regulation, that is something that music therapy can really positively impact. So you can get that, you know, that respiration regulation, you can get a lower heart rate, you can get a lower blood pressure, because that's the part of the brain that music works on.
This is Upstate's The Informed Patient Podcast. I'm your host, Amber Smith. I'm talking with Claire Arizina. She's a music therapist at Upstate Golisano Children's Hospital. So let's talk about how music therapy works at the Upstate Golisano Children's Hospital. How do you determine which patients could benefit?
Sure. I work as part of the Child Life Department. We are exclusively in pediatrics, so I can see any pediatric patient. We don't bill for our services. We're part of the hospital per diem, just like nursing. However, there's one of me in 71 beds. So while I could see anybody, I can't see everybody. And I really do my best to identify patients who are having a harder time coping or who might have a harder time coping for whatever reason.
When you find a particular patient, how do you assess what they need?
It's a combination of interdisciplinary referral and report, looking at their chart, as well as direct observation. So when it's appropriate, I have a conversation with a patient or a family to find out what's been the hardest for them, talk about what I can offer and what might be most helpful. But sometimes I come into the room and the kid is already crying. So in that situation, I kind of, you know, implement first and then ask questions later. But in a situation like that, it's very clear what needs to happen. The kid is having a hard time coping and they need help.
So what style of music do you find yourself using the most in the children's hospital?
As the tides of popular music turn, so do the songs that I use most often, but overall, whatever the patient prefers. So for our littles, you know, there's a reason that Raffi and Coco Melon, Lori Berkner, Miss Rachel are so popular. And that's because those kinds of music really tune into what developing brains like and need. So that the repetition, the predictability, the sort of narrower melodic range, the very predictable, oh, this is where that, you know, that word is going to be at the end of every line of the song. And I can anticipate that. And that feels really good for my developing brain. So those sort of like more early childhood songs for the early childhood set, you know, and certainly by elementary school, school age, teenage, you know, kids develop very strong music preferences. And a lot of times it has to do with what they've been exposed to, you know, maybe what the family listens to at home, maybe what their friends listen to at school, maybe a style of music that just feels really good to their particular nervous system. So maybe it's a kid who's overall sensory seeking, but who really resonates with like heavy metal music or, you know, hardcore rap. So there's a lot of both sensory and cultural components that go into music preference. But again, whatever the family listens to, whatever they like is what I'll play. You know, so I've been joking with families, like been doing a lot of Pink Pony Club for all ages. No judgment about Pink Pony Club. But, you know, also I learned the song Take It Easy by the Eagles for a 4-year-old. And that was just his, that was his personal favorite song at four, was, you know, 70s rock. So here we are. You just never know.
Now, do you play recorded music or do you play music on instruments?
Yeah. So most often I do live music because in that situation, I can make the music what it needs to be in that moment for that patient. So I can slow down a tempo. I can hold a phrase to let them participate. I can, you know, alter the intensity of it. So if a kid is crying, I can make the music sound louder and kind of get their attention more. And then kind of bring them down from there. So live music really gives me that flexibility to be really, really therapeutic with it. However, on the other side of the coin, I like to think a very good musician, but I'm not chaperone. I am not, you know, little baby. I try really hard, but I am not a good rapper. So when a patient has, you know, a really strong preference for a particular genre or a particular artist that isn't well created acoustically, that would tend to be when I would use recorded music. Or if they have a favorite song that I just don't know. And sometimes it's like, oh, let's have the artist sing it for us. And so that I'm able to pull out my tablet and my good Bluetooth speaker and we can listen to it together.
So how important has music been in your life?
Yeah. So I have maybe the typical music therapist story, maybe not. My parents actually met each other when they were in high school singing in their church folk choir. So I joke that I didn't have a choice about a lot of things in my life. But, you know, I've been singing and making music for as long as I can remember. That was always part of our family life. We had an upright piano in our dining room. So I started taking piano lessons when I was in kindergarten. I started flute in fourth grade. I was in choir all the way up through elementary school and high school. I was in marching band. I was in all the musicals. I was always the music kid. That was always a huge part of my life.
So piano and flute, other instruments do you play?
So I am primarily a vocalist. So when you go to college to be a music therapist, they have you declare a primary instrument, which is what you take most of your lessons on. And I was a voice major. But I also learned acoustic guitar. That's a really big part of my practice now. And ukulele is another thing that I use fairly often, as well as a variety of percussion instruments. So shakers, drums, that kind of thing.
Did you know at an early age that you wanted to become a music therapist?
So I had always wanted to be a teacher. So that was always my pretend play when I was in preschool and up through elementary school. I was like, okay, I'm going to go into education. I'm going to be a teacher. And then when I was in middle school, I started volunteering at a camp for kids and adults with disabilities. So really, getting to see what other kinds of people were like in the world. And I was like, you know, I really like helping this population. Maybe I'll go into special education. And then around my junior year of high school, I found out about music therapy and I went, aha, this is where that musicianship and that desire to help people can really come together. And it's been a really fulfilling career for me. I've been able to go and have a, you know, sort of abbreviated college search because there weren't that many places that had music therapy as a major. And, you know, I was able to go in and get my bachelor's degree and start working right away. So that's been a really, you know, again, similar to yet different from a lot of the way that a lot of people come to music therapy.
I'm curious about the educational training to become a music therapist. There's got to be a lot of music, obviously, but is there a lot of like educational stuff too?
Yeah. Music therapy is a minimum of a bachelor's degree. So there are schools all over the US and Canada that offer bachelor's degrees in music therapy. And then there's master's programs that are designed for like deeper, more psychological work. Most programs do emphasize musicianship. A lot of them are located in the School of Music. I went to Nazareth, now University, and I took all the same classes as the music education majors. So it was, you know, here's your music therapy program. It will look real similar to the music education program until junior year when you'll take therapy classes and the education students will take education classes.
Gotcha. And then there's board certification after that.
Yeah. Too. Yep. Programs that are accredited by AMTA, which is the American Music Therapy Association, include all of the necessary components to become board certified. So it's 1,200 hours of clinical training in addition to your coursework. So 200 of it is done sort of pre, not graduation, but like pre coursework finishing. So you'll have like, you know, you'll have observation, you'll have experiences making music with different groups of people, and then you'll have more like clinical therapy work supervised by music therapists. And that's 200 hours at the degree level. And then after you're done with all of your coursework, you go and you do a 1,000-hour internship. So about 6 months full time.
Now, where besides hospitals might music therapists work?
as we've talked about, because of the wide variety of populations that music therapists can help, music therapists can really work anywhere. Most often, music therapists do work in hospitals, in schools, especially with kids with IEPs, so special education, nursing homes, group homes. Many music therapists see patients in a clinical setting or a home-based setting. So really, anywhere there are people that need help, music therapists can work.
What's the best part of your job?
The very best part of my job is getting to see the best version of a kid and the best version of a family and, you know, being able to meet them and make music with them to help them in their journey. It's very rewarding to help patients get to that point where they can be the best that they can be, even in a situation that might otherwise be really challenging.
Oh, well, thank you so much for telling us about music therapy.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
My guest has been music therapist Claire Arizina. The Informed Patient is a podcast covering health, science, and medicine brought to you by Upstate Medical University in Syracuse, New York, and produced by Jim Howe, with sound engineering by Bill Broquel and graphic design by Dan Cameron. Find our archive of previous episodes at upstate.edu/informed. If you enjoyed this episode, please invite a friend to listen. You can also rate and review the Informed Patient podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you tune in. This is your host, Amber Smith, thanking you for listening.